Hello and welcome to your Biology Revision podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most fascinating topics in the entire specification, the genome and gene expression. Whether you're revising for your GCSEs or your A-levels, this episode is going to give you everything you need to feel confident walking into that exam hall. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get started. Let me begin by painting you a picture. Inside almost every single cell in your body, and we're talking about trillions of cells, there's a complete instruction manual for building and running you. That instruction manual is your genome. It's written in a chemical language using just four letters, A, T, C, and G. And the way those letters are arranged determines everything from your eye color to how your liver processes sugar. That's what this topic is all about, understanding that instruction manual, how it's structured, and how cells actually read and use it. By the end of this episode, you'll understand the structure of DNA, how the genetic code works, the process of protein synthesis, the difference between coding and non-coding DNA, and how genetic profiling is used in the real world. These are all areas that examiners absolutely love to test, so let's make sure you're ready. Now let's get into the core concepts, starting with DNA structure. DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid, and it is a polymer that's a long molecule made up of repeating units called monomers. In DNA's case, those monomers are called nucleotides. Each nucleotide has three components, a phosphate group, a deoxyribose sugar, that's a 5-carbon sugar, and one of four nitrogenous bases. Those four bases are adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine, abbreviated to A, T, C, and G. Now here's something examiners test constantly. The structure of the double helix. DNA is made of two strands of nucleotides twisted around each other in that famous double helix shape, first described by Watson and Crick in 1953. The two strands are held together by hydrogen bonds between the bases, and this is where complementary base pairing comes in. Adenine always pairs with thymine, and cytosine always pairs with guanine. Always. No exceptions. Adenine and thymine form two hydrogen bonds. Cytosine and guanine form three hydrogen bonds. That extra hydrogen bond is why CG pairs are slightly stronger, and that's a detail that can earn you marks in the exam. The two strands also run in opposite directions. We call this antiparallel. One strand runs from 5' to 3', and the other runs from 3' to 5'. Understanding antiparallel strands is essential for explaining DNA replication and transcription. Now let's talk about how DNA is organized inside the cell. DNA is found in the nucleus, and it's packaged incredibly efficiently. The DNA double helix is wound around proteins called histones, forming structures called nucleosomes. These are then coiled further to form chromatin, and during cell division, chromatin condenses into chromosomes. Humans have 46 chromosomes arranged in 23 pairs. Each chromosome is essentially one very long, tightly coiled DNA molecule. A gene is a specific sequence of DNA bases on a chromosome that codes for a particular protein. The genome is the term for the complete set of genetic information in an organism. Every single gene, every chromosome, all of it. When scientists completed the Human Genome Project in 2003, they mapped out all 3 billion base pairs in the human genome. That was a monumental achievement, and its medical implications are enormous. Now, here's something that surprises many students. Only about 2% of the human genome actually codes for proteins. The rest, the vast majority, is non-coding DNA. For a long time, scientists called this junk DNA, but we now know it plays crucial roles. Non-coding DNA includes introns, which are sequences within genes that are removed before the mRNA is used. It also includes regulatory sequences that control when and how much a gene is expressed, and it includes repetitive sequences that are used in genetic profiling. So please, never dismiss non-coding DNA as unimportant in exam answer. Let's move on to the genetic code and how it works. The sequence of bases in a gene acts as a code for building a protein. Proteins are made of amino acids, and the order of amino acids determines the protein's shape and function. The code works in triplets. Every 3 consecutive bases, called a codon, codes for one specific amino acid. For example, the codon AUG codes for the amino acid, methionine, and also acts as a start signal. The codons UAA, UAG, and UGA are stop codons, they signal the end of the protein. The triplet code has some important properties that examiners love to ask about. It is degenerate, meaning most amino acids are coded for by more than one codon. There are 64 possible codons, but only 20 amino acids, so there's redundancy built in. It is also non-overlapping. Each base is only read as part of one codon, not shared between codons. And it is universal. The same codons code for the same amino acids in almost all living organisms, from bacteria to humans. That universality is powerful evidence for evolution from a common ancestor. Now let's walk through protein synthesis. This is a two-stage process: transcription and translation. Transcription happens in the nucleus. The DNA double helix unwinds and the hydrogen bonds between the two strands break. One strand, the template strand, is used as a blueprint. An enzyme called RNA polymerase moves along the template strand, reading the bases and building a complementary strand of messenger RNA, or mRNA. The rules are similar to DNA base pairing, but with one key difference. In RNA, there is no thymine. Instead, uracil pairs with adenine. So where the DNA template has adenine, the mRNA gets uracil. Cytosine still pairs with guanine. The mRNA strand that's produced is a complementary copy of the coding strand of DNA. It has the same sequence as the coding strand, just with uracil instead of thymine. Once transcription is complete, the mRNA strand attaches, and in eukaryotes, it undergoes processing. The non-coding intron sequences are spliced out, leaving only the coding exon sequences. The mature mRNA then exits the nucleus through a nuclear pore. Translation happens at the ribosome, which can be found on the rough endoplasmic reticulum or floating freely in the cytoplasm. The ribosome reads the mRNA strand, three bases at a time, each codon. Transfer RNA molecules, or tRNA, bring the correct amino acids to the ribosome. Each tRNA has an anticodon, a sequence of three bases that is complementary to the mRNA codon. When the anticodon matches the codon, the amino acid attached to that tRNA is added to the growing polypeptide chain. A peptide bond forms between adjacent amino acids. The ribosome moves along the mRNA, adding amino acids one by one until it reaches a stop codon. At that point, the polypeptide chain is released and folds into its functional three-dimensional shape. So to summarize protein synthesis, DNA is transcribed into mRNA in the nucleus, and then mRNA is translated into a polypeptide at the ribosome. The sequence of bases in DNA determines the sequence of codons in mRNA, which determines the sequence of amino acids in the protein, which determines the protein's shape and function. That chain of causation is absolutely central to this topic. Now let's talk about alleles and genetic variation. A gene can exist in different versions called alleles. These arise through mutations, changes to the base sequence of DNA. A single base substitution, for example, can change one codon, which might change one amino acid in the protein, which might alter the protein's shape and function. This is how genetic variation arises at the molecular level. In some cases, a mutation has no effect because the code is degenerate. The new codon still codes for the same amino acid. In other cases, the effect can be significant, as in conditions like sickle cell anemia. Finally, let's talk about genetic profiling, sometimes called DNA fingerprinting. This technique exploits the repetitive non-coding sequences in DNA, specifically short tandem repeats, which are sequences of bases repeated many times in a row. The number of repeats at any given location varies between individuals, making each person's profile unique. In genetic profiling, DNA is extracted, cut into fragments using restriction enzymes, separated by size using gel electrophoresis, and the resulting pattern of bands is compared. This is used in forensic science to identify suspects, in paternity testing, and in medical research to identify genetic diseases. Now let's move into exam tips and the most common mistakes I see candidates make. The number one mistake is confusing the template strand and the coding strand. Remember, the template strand is the one that RNA polymerase reads. The mRNA produced is complementary to the template strand, which means it has the same sequence as the coding strand, just with uracil instead of thymine. Many candidates get this backwards and lose marks. The second big mistake is forgetting to use uracil in RNA sequences. In any exam question that asks you to write out an mRNA sequence, make sure you replace every T with a U. This is a one-mark error that is completely avoidable. Third, When explaining how a mutation affects a protein, you must follow the chain all the way through. Don't just say the mutation changes the protein. Say, the mutation changes the base sequence, which changes the codon, which changes the amino acid, which changes the sequence of amino acids in the polypeptide, which alters the shape of the protein, which affects its function. Each step can be worth a separate mark. Fourth, don't confuse genome with gene. The genome is the entire genetic material of an organism. A gene is just one section of that genome that codes for a specific protein. Fifth, for non-coding DNA, never say it has no function. Examiners will not award marks for that. Instead, say it plays regulatory roles, or that it includes introns that are spliced out during mRNA processing. Now for your quick-fire recall quiz, cover up your notes and see how you get on. Question 1. What are the three components of a DNA nucleotide? Pause and think. The answer is a phosphate group, a deoxyribose sugar, and a nitrogenous base. Question 2. Which base pairs with cytosine in DNA? Pause, guanine, and they form three hydrogen bonds. Question 3. What is the difference between transcription and translation? Pause. Transcription is the production of mRNA from a DNA template in the nucleus. Translation is the production of a polypeptide from an mRNA template at the ribosome. Question 4. What is a codon? Pause. A sequence of three bases on mRNA that codes for one specific amino acid. Question 5. What is the genome? Pause. The complete set of genetic information in an organism, including all genes and non-coding DNA. How did you do? If you got all 5, brilliant, you're in great shape. If you missed any, go back and review those sections before your exam. Let me leave you with a quick summary of the key points to take away from today. 1. DNA is a polymer made of nucleotides, each containing a phosphate group, deoxyribose sugar, and one of four bases, A, T, C, or G. 2. Complementary base pairing holds the double helix together. A pairs with T via two hydrogen bonds, and C pairs with G via three hydrogen bonds. 3. The genome is the complete genetic material of an organism. Only about 2% codes for proteins. The rest is non-coding DNA with regulatory and structural roles. 4. Protein synthesis involves two stages. Transcription in the nucleus produces mRNA, and translation at the ribosome produces a polypeptide. 5. The genetic code is a triplet code, three bases code for one amino acid. It is degenerate, non-overlapping, and universal. 6. Mutations change the base sequence of DNA, which can alter the amino acid sequence and therefore the shape and function of a protein. 7. Genetic profiling uses short tandem repeats in non-coding DNA to create unique DNA profiles for forensic and medical applications. That's everything for today's episode. You've covered a huge amount of ground, and if you've been actively recalling and making notes as we went, you're already doing the most effective kind of revision. Keep going. You've got this. Good luck in your exams, and I'll see you in the next episode.